Welcome to Next Us 818 Podcast, a reflective platform for connecting past successes with future progress in the African American community. I'm your host, Dr. JC. The inaugural season of Next Us 818 Podcast focuses on the 6888 Central Postal Directory Battalion, the only all African American, all female battalion to serve in the European Theater of Operations during World War II. If you're tuning into the podcast for the very first time, I encourage you to check out the inaugural episode from September the 7th of 2022 to learn about the background of the 6888 Battalion. Episode 16 features Romay Johnson Davis, who served in the 6888. My guest tonight is Dr. Karen Jordan, who recently went to Alabama to visit the 6888 soldier, Romay Johnson Davis. Welcome, Karen.
Welcome. Thank you.
I always like to start with a few interesting facts. First, Romay, or Mrs. Davis, is 103 years old and is the oldest living member of the 6888 Battalion. Second, she learned Taekwondo and earned a belt, a black belt, in her 70s, and then spent two decades in her 80s and 90s working in Winn-Dixie grocery store in Montgomery. And third, she paints and writes poetry. It's a pretty interesting background she has there. Mm-hmm. So before we actually discuss your meeting, tell me how the meeting with Romay came to be. You're a 6888 descendant and very engaged with other descendants. How did you first become aware of Romay Davis?
Well, I routinely surf the internet for anything related, well, the internet, the Facebook, well, mostly internet and Facebook, for anything that has to do with the 6888. And it's because I'm just totally obsessed with them, the ladies. And so I came across an article several months ago, back in the fall, about this woman in Alabama named Miss Romay Davis that was the oldest living 6888 member. And I read the article and I was fascinated. The article was talking about how they had a big celebration. There was a big, I think when she turned 100, there was a big Romay Davis Day, and there was a big celebration, and Winn-Dixie had started a foundation or scholarship in her name and in her honor. And I thought, wow, this is quite an interesting lady and quite an interesting story. So I had always planned to go to Alabama because I wanted to follow the civil rights trail. I wanted to go to all the museums down there. And I realized, oh my, she's in Montgomery. So I want to meet her. And I felt like I was going to meet the Queen of England. I was so excited about meeting this woman. So I was able to arrange it through her goddaughter. And that's how it worked out. And she was very pleasant, very happy. She's always happy to receive guests. And that's what happened. That's how it worked out.
So there are six other living 6888 soldiers, and I know you've read about them. What made you decide to visit her in particular?
Well, she's the oldest. I visited her because she's the oldest and because I was coordinating it with a trip to Montgomery, Alabama, and I realized that she lives in Montgomery, Alabama. So I said, well, and I was going on the Civil Rights Trail to visit those museums, and I thought, well, she's certainly a part of the civil rights legacy. So
absolutely.
I wanted to meet her. Like I say, she was willing, she's lucid and warm and gracious and willing to meet me. And I that was the highlight of my trip.
Okay. So let's now talk some more about her. Let's go back to the beginning. So she was born in October 1919 in King George County, Virginia. And she is a middle child of six and the only girl. There were no African-American high schools in King George County, so she attended numerous high schools in New Jersey, New York, and Washington, D.C., and I understand she graduated from Dunbar High School in Washington, D.C., which, there were only two Black high schools at the time?
Yes, and she's only born a year after our mother, so they probably were contemporaries, but not in the same school. There were two major Black high schools in D.C. There was one called Dunbar and one called Cardoza. Our mother graduated from Cardoza, and she graduated from the other Black school, which was Dunbar.
Okay. So how old was she when she enlisted?
Well, she was born in 1919 and she enlisted in 1943. So I'm guessing she was somewhere around 24.
What was she doing at the time of enlistment? Do you know that?
Okay. After at the time of enlistment, she was working for the federal government in the doing the Department of Engraving. So so she came from the federal government
Okay.
into the military.
What did she tell you about why she decided to enlist?
You know, she didn't really talk about it other than the fact that all of her brothers were there. And so she wanted to follow the brothers. Every one of them was enlisted in the military at the time. And that was an era of patriotic time. And a lot of Black women were starting to join. There was a push to get Black women to join. So she joined along. She says, I wanted to follow the boys.
It was still a very courageous thing for a young Black woman to enlist in the army in the 40s. With
Yes,
the
but
what do you think made her special?
well, no, I mean, yes, it was. But if you think about it, she already came up from Virginia. She moved to DC. I know at one point she and her family lived in New Jersey. And so she had been away. She'd already left the South and done different things and ended up working in the federal government in DC. So I think she already had that sense of adventure, you know, that I can do more, that I can do better, that she didn't seem to have fear.
Yeah, and I also think from what you told me earlier, that she was limited in her job opportunities prior to the military.
Well, I think all of those women were. I mean, she actually was one of the luckier ones. She was working as an elevator operator, but she was actually one of the luckier ones, very much like our mother and some of the other ladies. She actually had a federal government job. So that was back in the day. I think that was supposed to be a pretty good thing for Black women to be able to do that.
I'm interested in any stories that she shared with you about her time in the service, any adventures or scary or funny memories. Because
Well,
you spent what, about an hour or two with her?
yes. Yeah, a
Okay.
little over an hour, I think, maybe an hour and a half with her. Yes. Well, the first thing that I do want to say about her is that she is a very gracious and warm woman, and but yet very humble. You know, when you first walk in, she goes, "Well, I don't know what I can do to help you, but I'll help you in every way I can. I'll tell you everything I can remember. You're welcome to, you know, I'll talk to you as much as you want to, you know, talk." And she said, "But you know, I just sort of wonder sometimes." We were talking about age, and she was saying, "You know, I was just wondering one time, sometime about why I'm still here and in this position." She said, "But I guess I feel like I still have something to do." And I said, "Well, yes, you are actually a treasure, and you do have something to do. You have stories to tell. I mean, you're our connection to our mothers." And and again, she's very lucid. I mean, she couldn't remember people's names, but gee, I'm 40 years younger and I can't remember people's names. So, but a couple of things she did say, she said, she looked at, I brought her a bunch of pictures of that I had gotten off the internet and printed up and made into an album. She was quite fascinated by that because she says, "Oh my, I remember this. Oh yes, these women, wow, I hadn't seen these in so long." So she was quite excited about the pictures that I brought her. But of course, she said, "Unfortunately, I was hoping she could help me identify some of the pictures from our mother's scrapbook, but she said she couldn't remember names. There were too many." But there were a couple of things that she did point out. She said, "You know, one thing about these women, we always looked good. Now, it was so important for them to be, you know, the hair, the uniforms, the makeup, the nails, whatever they were allowed to do. I don't know what the limitations were in terms of makeup and nails and jewelry and stuff, but she said all the women were very meticulous about how they looked, and they were good-looking women, well put together women. That was important to them. The other thing she said that was important to them was travel, that when they weren't working, they traveled a lot, particularly when they were in France. Because I think by the time they got to France, even though France also had a backup of mail, they had a system in place that was working very smoothly. So they knew how to get things done as smoothly as they could in France. So they had a lot of free time. And she said they would get together in groups. They had their little cliques that they would hang out with, and they were always traveling around. She mentioned places she went, but also where other people went. They went up to the mountains. She mentioned going to the mountains. But they went all around France and some of the neighboring countries. And she said that was a regular thing, and the women had a good time with that.
So what did she do when she was actually in the services? She was in the, tell us about Cassandra.
Oh, okay. He was talking about, or she brought that up, that she was assigned exclusively to the Jeeps. So she said she was a part of the 6AAA, but her assignment was transportation. And as a part of that, there were a few other women there too. She wasn't the only one, but she was one of the main ones. But they were expected to know how to maintain those Jeeps. Now, I'm sure if something major went down, they weren't expected to fix it. But you know, your routine oil changes and keeping them filled up with gas and keeping them clean and anything that that you could possibly do as a one woman or a few women could do, then they were responsible for the Jeeps. And they were responsible for transporting anybody connected with the 6AAA and some other people too, outside other officers that asked for her. She'd have to get up and take people wherever they wanted to go. So she traveled a lot. She said she had one Jeep that was kind of big, and it was the one she used most of the time. So she decided to give it a name. And she said, yeah, that was my main Jeep was called Cassandra. And I got a little tickled because I said, well, where did you get Cassandra from? She said, I don't know, but it was a big Jeep and it was the one I was on the most. And I just figured it needed a name. And the name Cassandra came to me. And that was my main Jeep, Cassandra.
Wasn't she the primary driver for Charity Adams?
She was the primary driver. Apparently, she was the primary driver for the officers in general because she was for Charity, who was an officer, but she was the primary driver for, it seems like, other officers as well. Because she did mention, I don't know, well, I can bring this up now. She did mention an incident where, she knew she was a good driver. She said she was very, very cautious. But there was an incident when she was driving a general around, and somebody came at her from another direction and kind of ran her off the road a little bit. And so she got kind of shaken up, and the general did too. And she said she was so panicked because she thought that he was going to blame her or, criticize her for her driving. And she took pride in her driving. She was a very cautious driver. And he immediately said to her, are you all right? And she said, yeah, I'm just shaken up a little bit, but I think I'm okay. And he said, yeah, those people, that other driver, man, and you were good. You got out of his way, but boy, oh boy. And so she said that's something she was very happy about, that he respected the fact that she was the safe driver and that she was able to avoid the accident, but it was the other person that clearly would have caused the accident had she not been such a careful driver.
Okay. Any other stories you share from your time over there?
She did not know, other than the fact that, she made a point, and I think in all the books that you read, the 6AAA was a totally self-contained unit. And everybody, even though their primary function was the mail, everybody had a special role. So actually, there was the team of drivers, and that was her and a few other ladies. I think they all were self-contained. So the women didn't all handle the mail. That was the predominant function, but they had the beauty shops, they had the transportation department, they had people who did the cooking, and I guess, I don't know what other kind of labor jobs were needed, support jobs. Women all, oh, there were medics there as well. So it was an entirely self-contained, and there were clerical workers as well. So they looked at what your skill, the one thing that Charity Adams did is looked at people's individual skill sets and assigned you based on where your strengths were. So she did talk about that, how people were not all handling the mail. She said, in fact, she rarely even went into the mail area. She said she
What
didn't see a lot of that.
did she tell you where she learned to maintain these trucks and drive the Jeep before, if that was her specialty in the army?
She didn't act like she knew before she went in. So I'm
Okay.
imagining she learned all of that stateside. She had to have known that before she went over to England.
Right. Okay.
So I'm assuming somewhere stay. Well, there was a lot, if you, with the stories about the 6888, the women were in the military for a while and they were training to do all kinds of things. The problem was they received the training and then they had no assignments after they finished the training. So I've read about how many of them were trained, and some of them did want to be in the motor pool. Some of them asked to be in the motor pool, and they were trained, but there was no assignments for them to go to because you had to wait until you were asked by, I guess, some white officer would state that they needed your services. A lot of them were just being trained and weren't really being utilized, and that was one of the big issues that everybody had. With the women that went into the 6888, you've got all these smart women with all these skills and all this training, and you're not using them. And so here at 6888, they were able to use everybody's skills that they had acquired during basic training, well, during their training periods at the various forts.
Many of the ones I've interviewed now, I don't know, maybe 10 families, and many of them seem to have, they were assigned to duties that were similar to things that they may have done prior to coming to the service. That they were, if they had a set of skills prior to that, they were assigned to duties that are related to that, if possible. That's not true
Yeah,
with every, it's certainly not true with everyone.
right. She didn't mention anything about doing trucks beforehand. I mean, I guess it was something that she was interested in and excited about. And I know it was one of the training programs that was available to the WACs. I guess she liked it, and that's what she asked to be trained in. Yes, some of them did have their own skills, like the beauticians. There were people that came in. People came from all walks of
Yeah,
life.
and the medics.
So the medics, some of the medics were like, one of them was in nursing school before she hadn't finished, but she qualified because she had some nursing training. And some of them went as medics, and a number of them had had clerical jobs, so they went in to do clerical jobs. And as we know, some went in to do cryptography. But so they all, and actually, interestingly enough, this is a side story. But the ladies that were killed in Normandy, there was no, they didn't know what to do in terms of the funeral arrangements, in terms of prepping the bodies. There was no money to bury the ladies properly. So the 6888 women got together, and as it turned out, there had been some women that had in the group that had worked in funeral homes. So they were able, I don't think they did the embalming, but they were able to get the bodies prepared for burial, for viewing and burials. So because they had skills. A lot of these ladies had skills. And whenever you needed skills, Cherry Adams was able to find somebody in that group of 855 women that could do stuff.
So for my audience, there were three of the 855 women were killed, not in combat, but they were killed in an automobile accident. And because they were in Europe at the time, they were not bringing bodies back over. They are the only there are four women total buried in Normandy, three of them African American, and in the 6888. So they died in an automobile accident. So what did I'd like to hear what she did when she completed the military service, education, career, and family. She talk about that?
Yes, she did. She went to a school out of New York. She always wanted to be a fashion designer. I don't know where she, well, I do think I understand that. She's very artistic. So she wanted to be a fashion designer. And I don't know the names that went to, which I'd have to look up the name of the school because I don't know how to pronounce it. But let's see if I can find the name of her school. It started with a T. She went to this school in New York. She didn't come, she came back home and went to New York.
Looks like a Trefagen
Yeah, Trefagen, yeah.
School of Fashion.
Yes, that's where she went with and with her GI Bill. And so she graduated from there. And she started out designing women's clothes. She actually showed me, she has a whole notebook of her different designs that she did. I took some pictures of them. And, well, she has several notebooks of her designs. But she got someone connected her with a company that was doing children's clothes. And the guy looked at her work and he liked her work. So I think it was a company out of Michigan, but they were in New York. And so he hired her. And from that point on, she went from designing women's clothes to designing children's clothes. And again, she has pictures of many of her designs, but she did that probably until she was ready for retirement. And she stayed in New York and she did that. And she said she used to continue to draw women's clothes on the side because that was sort of her hobby. She showed me this interesting hat that she drew with all kinds of different designs on it. It never got made, but it was one of her favorite designs.
Okay. Did she pursue any other education beyond that?
Later on, she got a master's, I believe, in education. I don't know where from. This was later on in life. I think that was after she retired from being a fashion designer. And of course, somewhere along the line, she did meet a gentleman, Davis, Mr. Davis, who she married. He was a carpenter for the SEPTA, not SEPTA, for the rail train station, the train service in New York. And so she and he got married, and they stayed married until his death.
So she was she able to take advantage of the GI Bill?
Yes, I, she took the, she got her education paid for, yes, by the GI Bill.
That's very good because that wasn't true for all of the women. So it's nice when we, what nice when that certainly worked for some of the women.
But if you think about it, most of these women would not, the ones who went to college would not have been able to go without the GI Bill. I mean,
Right.
thank God it was there, and thank God they knew that it was available to them and knew how to get it.
Although some had already completed college, the college
Yes.
degrees when they went in. So, yeah,
Yes,
so you had.
that was different, but many of the most of them hadn't. And so it seems like the ones that were the officers were the ones that had the degrees already. But the other ladies who went in, who didn't have degrees already, that was how they got their degrees.
So it's a significant honor for the 6888 to receive a Congressional Gold Medal. What did Romaine tell you about her reaction to receiving it?
Oh, she was very excited about that. And she had gotten some other medals too. There was another medal that was awarded to her. I don't remember who. I think it was a museum that she's had several ceremonies and acknowledgments, but she was very proud about a medal that she got before the 6888. In fact, I have a picture of her. She wanted me to take a picture of her with that one on her neck. But she was very excited about the getting the Congressional Gold Medal. She, of course, doesn't have the medal, but what someone did for her, which was quite lovely, is that they took the proclamation that was signed and they made up a beautiful, they framed it beautifully. And she's so proud of that because that's the only thing she has for for the Congressional Gold Medal is the proclamation for
Right.
that the signed proclamation that they received the medal. But she was very surprised. And you know, in some ways, I think I mean, she's the same way that it sounds like other people's mothers were. They looked at this as a job that they had to do. They didn't expect any kind of honor or glory to come out of that. And I think some of these ladies at this late date and time are quite surprised, pleasantly, that they are being honored because they never expected. The general sense that they had was, okay, as we know, they didn't want to be send black people, these black women, to the European theater of operation. There was considerable resistance in the military on stateside about sending these ladies over to Europe. They kind of did it with the, you know, you got to prove yourself kind of attitude. We don't know you're going to be able to do it, but we're going to put you over there and you're going to have to make it work. And so they went there with that fight attitude that they were soldiers, but they were fighting. They weren't fighting on the front line, but they looked at it as a fight, you know, something that they had to conquer. And so going over there, they wanted to prove themselves. They got right in there, and they didn't complain. I mean, I guess some people complain, but for the most part, they jumped in and they did what they had to do. And the circumstances were awful, but they never wanted it said that, you see, they were sort of an experimental group, and they never wanted it said that they were not going to be successful or that they didn't succeed. And that's why they got everything done in 3 months as opposed to 6 months. But they took a lot of pride in their work, and that was their focus. You know, we got a job to do. We are soldiers. This is our front line, and we're going to conquer this. And that's the way it is. And they were very proud that they did it in 3 months.
Absolutely.
And many of them seem to talk about the same kind of thing, that sense of pride.
That's true. Patriotism and pride
Yep.
and a spirit of adventure.
Yes.
So.
They had a, she said the one thing about it all, they worked like dogs, but they had a good time. Those ladies had a good time. And if you think about it, they were all in there, most of them were in their early 20s, and it's just sort of like in the 60s when people went off to college for 4 years, and you know, you were young and you were enjoying yourself and you were experiencing new adventures. So these ladies, they were young ladies having a good time.
But I also think that they had opportunities in Europe that they did not have in the United States.
Well, they had a different kind of acceptance.
Right.
Now, in England, there was a curiosity about them. And first of all, slavery had been, there was no slavery in England way before it had been abolished in the United States. And there was a little more, there was no prohibition against interracial relationships. So some of them were able to date white men, and the white men seemed to like, you know, they took interest in some of the ladies. And so did the community people take interest in them and invited them to their homes and took, you know, had them have high tea with the biscuits and whatever they eat, but high tea.
Something that would
And
not have happened in the United States at that time.
no, they could go freely there. In fact, what I've read about many of the books, in many of the books about them, it was they in Europe, they experienced more racism within the military than they did in the community. Now, apparently, when they went to France, they were not received quite as well in France, only because France had been decimated by the war, and the French people were a little angry to see these black ladies come in there with nylon stockings and makeup and jewelry and, you know, looking good, looking sharp, and they didn't have anything. A lot of their homes had been demolished during the war. So the French were a little more, it sounds like a little more envious of them, but it still, they had free rein to roam all around France and Germany I'm sorry, France and I guess surrounding countries. I know they went to Belgium, some of them went to Belgium.
Right. Yes. What did you, what's the most important lesson you learned while meeting with Mamie Davis?
That,
Anything?
yes, I mean, this is a woman who has lived her life to the fullest from day one to day 103. I mean, you know, she has gone through so many changes in her life, but she never stops becoming, you know, moving on to the next level. In fact, the only thing that she says, the only thing that's limiting her right now is mobility. She drove a car until she was, I want to say, 100 or 101. And she has just never stopped living. And she's had a lot of tragedies in her life. She did speak of the painful thing. She's lost all but one brother. She nursed her mother until her mother died in the, I think in the late 90s, no, the 2000s. And she lost a husband to Alzheimer's, but she nursed him until he died. She took on the challenges and the struggles of life, but she just never stopped living. You know, she never gave up. And she went from one phase of life to the other. So she went from her career of maybe 25, 30 years, and then she left that, and then she went back and got a master's, believe it was in education. I don't know whether she used that or not, but she probably did. And then she went on and she decided around 70 she wanted to do Taekwondo, and she did that until she got her black belt. All along the line, she has been painting and writing poetry. I was fortunate enough to see some of her paintings and take some pictures of them. And then when she was somewhere in her 80s or 90s, 90, she went into her regular Winn-Dixie grocery store, and she was complaining about how disorganized the shelves were, and she could never find things, and nobody put things in the right order, and didn't they have anybody to do it? And after complaining to the manager a couple of times, he says, "I don't have anybody to do that. So, I mean, do you want to do it?" And she said, "Yeah, I'll do it." And so they arranged something. They started out training her, she said, as a cashier too, as a backup cashier. But they said she was too slow because she wanted to talk to everybody. And they said, well, they needed somebody to move people on out the store real fast. So she was assigned a job, I think a couple of days a week. And she went all around the store looking for stuff that was mismatched, was disorganized. You know how people put stuff back wherever they do, or they put stuff on the shelf when they're stocking, but they don't stock it right so that that the signs are on top of below the items and all. So that was her job, to go through 3 days a week all the shelves and to organize them. And she did that, took herself to work every day. I think it was around 100 or so that she stopped,
Amazing.
because she does have some mobility limitations. She was trying to explain something to me about something that happened with her spine, and I wasn't quite clear exactly what happened, but she had some kind of issues with her spine. And so she says she walks sideways now, and she can't, her balance is off, but she has to use a walker. But I suspect she'd still be working had she not had that physical limitation.
Yeah.
So
So she was re
she just lives. I mean, she just the Grim Reaper is going to catch her on the run. She's just living. I mean, right now she's become a living legacy. She gets a lot of visitors. She gets a lot of honors. There's always some kind of celebration for her. I mean, there's a citywide Romy Davis, Johnson Davis Day. They've had ceremonies. The government, even old the old government governor of Alabama, Kay, whatever her name is, has come down and sent read a proclamation.
Yeah, KIV.
Kay Ivey even sent a proclamation or read a proclamation to her. So they've had all kinds of activities, and every birthday is the Romy Davis birthday. So they always have a big celebration. And the Winn-Dixie has either a foundation or scholarship in her name. So, I mean, she looks forward to all these celebrations.
It's great. It's great. You've done a lot of reading about the 6888 Battalion, obviously. What did you learn about the 6888 and their legacy as a consequence of meeting with her? Any final thoughts on that?
That relates directly to her.
No, about the legacy and as a consequence of meeting with her, did you learn anything else about their
I don't know that I have learned anything special about her, but
Oh, about the
we
six
all
triple
know,
eight and
and the
their
six
legacy.
triple eight. Well, we all know now, listening to podcasts and having phone conversations with other descendants. We all have an idea of what the women were like. What I felt a special connection with her because she's still here. And so you felt like all our mothers, most of our mothers and grandmothers are gone from the 6888, but it just felt special that there was somebody who was there. I said, you're special to me because my mother is not here, and I feel like you are my connection to her. And that was the special thing. She was there. She made everything seem alive, because she was right there when everything was going on. And that was the special connection I felt when I was there, that I was, she was the spirit. She embodied the spirit of our mothers. I mean, I think everybody who would interview her would feel like they were there with one of their parents, with their mother or grandmother. She just gives you that feeling of, yep, I was there. okay, this is my mother. My mother was there. You're sharing with me her story.
Well, it's fantastic that you were able to go down and meet with her. I'm sure she appreciated that. And what I know you recorded part of the time you were her with her, and I listened to some of it, and she sounds amazing.
Oh my God, she's so sharp. That lady is so sharp. She put me to shame. She is quite sharp. There's not a thing wrong with her brain cells at all. I mean, yes, yeah, she said she could not help me with any of the pictures because, it was 855 women and it was 70 years ago. And,
It's almost 80, yeah, right, almost 80 years, right?
right. And she, so I was a little sad about that because I really saw all these, I took all these pictures down. And I was hoping she would say, oh, that's so and so, that's so and so. Perhaps that was an unrealistic expectation. But the other thing that she did remind me of is that she was not on the base a lot. She was always out. So she had her friends. Like I said, she remembered one girlfriend named Jordan, but she was more out and about. So
Right.
I don't think she was hanging with, I mean, like they all lived together. But I don't think she was hanging with the other ladies every day. She was only with the carpool group, which was only a few ladies. So
Okay.
there is a picture that's on the internet of her sitting in a Jeep with a couple of ladies around her. It's one of the ones you see. There's a number
Well,
of
the
them that pop
iconic
up
ones.
on the internet all the time. And one of them, I didn't know that that was her. She says, "Oh yeah, that's me," and some of the other ladies with the Jeeps. But yeah, but she just, you just felt like you were connecting with your mother, like your mother was still alive through her. That's what I felt. But I
Okay.
just felt so connected to her. You felt like you were almost visiting an aunt or something. I never met the woman before in my life, but immediately you walk in and she connects with you.
You felt that kinship.
Yeah, there's a special connection, almost like you're her own, one of her daughters. She doesn't, unfortunately, she does not have any children, but you feel like you could be one of her children, that you wanted to adopt her. I felt myself, she was talking about how she had never been to see the monument yet. And she said, I really wish I could get out there. And I almost felt like saying, oh my God, I'd be happy to fly down and take you out there. I mean, she just gave you that feeling like you just wanted to do stuff with her and for her. She just connects with you like she was so happy. She was almost a little tearful when we left because she was enjoying showing her life. There is one little story that she told, and I think I saw this somewhere in a book or an article. She has this big chest, a trunk, a foot locker, a typical military foot locker. And in it, there's the uniform. There's probably some items they would have had, like mess kits and some of her medals and stuff. And someone actually had that made and then covered with plexiglass. So it's a permanent display. She was telling the story that when she came back, she was in a car and she had brought all her stuff. And someone stole stuff out of her car. They stole everything she brought back from the military, including her uniform, and everything was stolen out of her car. And that was always something that bothered her because she felt like she lost all of her memories. And I don't know who did this, but someone actually recreated what they thought would have been in her trunk and had it hermetically sealed, like an airtight kind of seal, I'm sure. I hope it was done right. And she has that in her living room, dining room.
Wow, that's amazing. Okay, I want to thank you for joining us tonight and sharing your experience with Gourmet Davis. Any final thoughts before we put a wrap on this?
No, I as I said at the beginning, I was very excited about going. I felt like I was going to visit to have an audience with the Queen, and I still feel that way. And I told her every year they have a big celebration for her birthday, which is in October. And I said, I will be here. And I said, from the looks of you, I think you're going to be here too. So if they have a celebration, and I've already told her goddaughter to be sure that I'm notified because I definitely want to go to her 104th celebration. As an aside, although this is not relevant to her, but I did recently find out that she is the oldest living 6888 member, but she is not the oldest that ever lived. there was a woman, Alice Dixon, who actually lived to be 107.
Wow.
She's now deceased. But from the looks of Ms. Davis, I don't know. She might pass that, surpass that. She's
Well,
really cool.
we can hope and pray.
She's pretty good. I don't know, other than the mobility. She seems like she's pretty good. I don't know her health situation, but she's managing pretty much. She has a caregiver that's there part-time, but it sounds like she's not at the point of 24/7 care yet.
Right. Well, she's just that. There's one other descent. One other soldier is on her heels in terms of age. Vicencia Garcia will be 103 next week.
Is she having a celebration too?
I haven't. I've actually asked that question. So it's funny you should ask. I sent a text message to her granddaughter today to see if there's going to be something.
I
So.
think with these ladies, I think you have to celebrate every year that they have. And I love the fact that Liz always solicits cards, birthday cards for these
Yes.
ladies, and then
So,
Liz goes to visit them.
okay,
Liz
Liz
Helm Frazier.
Helm Frazier, who's one of the six Triple Eight advocates.
So she has made it her business to go to all of their birthday celebrations and to solicit birthday cards. And I know for the last one, the one she went to for King, Lena King, had two. She had gotten 250 birthday cards, and I thought that was fabulous. And these women love it. I mean, they're so appreciative. So
Well,
I would love. I'd be happy in a minute to go back to Montgomery for her celebration. They put
hope.
stuff on her lawn. They put pictures on her lawn, 103. Oh, they do a big thing down there.
Well, hopefully you'll get a chance to do that, and after the 6888 Legacy Tour this summer, you have some new pictures to take back to it
Oh, yeah, she'll probably be
and
tickled
show her.
pink. Oh,
So.
my goodness, she'll be tickled.
Well,
So.
again, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight.
You're welcome.
And so next, if you have any others you plan to visit, let me know so we can get,
Well, I mean, I love the idea that Liz Helm Frazier goes to see them all. Now, I don't know about going out to Las Vegas and some of these other places. One woman recently had a birthday. She's in Wisconsin. But maybe if Garcia has something in New York City, that might not be hard to do. Because
Right.
I think as many people that can celebrate these ladies' birthdays, they're treasures. These are living
Absolutely.
treasures for us. Oh my God.
Absolutely.
So,
Absolutely.
especially the ones that are still lucid and, clear thinking. Some of them, I think, struggle a little bit more than others, but these ladies are clear as a bell. And so,
Well, hopefully they'll be able to get the metal minted while they're all still here. So that would be
well, if they
nice.
make it to 107, it'll be all right.
Won't take quite that long. We're hoping for 2023 or 2024.
Yeah,
So,
it would be lovely to do that for these ladies. Oh my gosh.
well, thank you so much for joining the show.
All righty.
To my audience, thank you for listening to Next Us 818 podcast. I hope you enjoyed our show. If you have questions or topics you'd like us to discuss, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, please email the show at nextus818podcast@gmail.com. That's nextus818podcast@gmail.com. I like to end each show with a favorite reflection. Tonight, I'll share a quote from Romae Johnson Davis herself on the occasion of her 103rd birthday. "Women are as capable as men are in their chosen positions. So if you give them more chance, and Black women especially, because they've not had the same opportunity, give them a chance and see what they can do. Ask them." Wise words, Ms. Davis. See you for our next show on Wednesday, May 3rd at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. You can catch the show on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Audible, Google Podcasts, and Spotify for podcasters.